Zoomer Radio, the original greatest hits, and that is Orlean's 1976 hit from the album Walking and Dreaming, Still the One, on the Morning Zoom with Sam and Jane. I'm Marissa Lennox, and for Sam.
And I'm Jane. And there was no one like him. The legendary Tony Bennett is being remembered by everyone in the music business, not just for being an iconic performer, but for being a really nice guy. Joining the conversation is renowned musicologist and promoter, our friend Eric Alper. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for spending some time talking about Tony Bennett.
Yeah, you've had a few days to think about his legacy. Put into words your thoughts on the late, great crooner.
I mean, that's it, really. He's going to be the last of that golden age crooner that we all somehow, no matter where we were from or our backgrounds, we eventually got to Tony Bennett, you know, whether it was through our own means or grandparents or parents. I mean, his vocal range, his smooth velvet voice, his emotional connection that he was able to make with his audience, just crossed generations. And I'm not sure if there's going to be anybody else coming up that will have that kind of lineage to reaching so many people. I mean, this is a guy that collaborated with Count Basie and Duke Ellington and Lady Gaga, Michael Bublé, Katie Lang, and Amy Winehouse. There's not a lot of people that could do something like that.
It's true, Eric. And I want to ask you about something he wrote in his memoir. He wrote this. Back in the 60s, I was told I had to change my music for the kids to accept me. Yet through the years, every age responds to my singing, even though I haven't changed a thing. And, maybe you could just talk about the significance of the fact that he really was a master of bridging generational divides. You mentioned Lady Gaga, Christina Aguilera, so Amy Winehouse, so many others.
Yeah, you know, he remained relevant and appreciated by audience for decades, releasing album after album after album and performing live well into his later years without changing anything. You know, in fact, probably, you know, at the lowest point of his career in the 70s, he got divorced. He owed the IRS an absolute ton of money. He developed an alcohol problem, and he asked his son Danny to help him out. And so Danny started to manage him, and he noticed that a lot of the kids that day were watching MTV, and especially that program MTV Unplugged. And, you know, keep in mind, this is the early 90s. This is the age of Nirvana and Soundgarden and Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. And here's this guy performing on MTV, the exact same set as what he would do in front of the San Francisco Symphony the week earlier. And he just developed a whole new audience for that. So it was just his phrasing and laser focused attention to the detail to his performance. Everybody just thought he was uber cool, no matter what age you were.
I remember just before that era, so it was 1986, and maybe you were there as well, Eric, at the Forum at Ontario Place. He was performing. He was in his late 50s. He hadn't quite gotten to the cusp of that comeback. But given that he was performing the same music as he always did, what was the connection that allowed him to rise to stardom once again and surpass that stardom?
You know, I'm not 100% convinced it was only the music. And I like to put a lot of emphasis on the person. I like to put a lot of emphasis on the ability for the performer to make a connection with the artist because of who they are as well. And because he served in World War II for about 6 years from 1944 to 1950, and he saw the war very, very up close, and he thought it was absolutely the worst place on earth to be. And that's where he started to become a peace-loving hippie before, you know, the hippies were born. He wanted a lot of freedom for people who otherwise wouldn't have it. He was starting to hang out with Martin Luther King and was a big civil rights organizer and activist, and he became a pacifist. And so all of these things, I think, served him really, really well. I think the people that he connected with in terms of, like, musical ability, those people that he collaborated with, I think that really, really gave him the ability to have those fan bases well into the 90s, when not only was he appearing on David Letterman and Conan O'Brien and all that stuff, but for me, it was like, because he appeared on the Simpsons and the Muppet Show and Sesame Street, and all those things have the ability to not necessarily be front and center when you're talking about an artist's career. But that matters to kids. And then the kids grow up, and they're like, yeah, let's go see Tony Bennett on Ontario Place. Remember when he was on Sesame Street? Like, those are the kind of things I think that elevate a from a star to a superstar.
Eric, before I let you go, just very quickly, you mentioned in the beginning he's a product of a bygone era. Will we ever be able to see another artist do it as authentically, own it, and live so comfortably in it?
I think the only one that may come to mind would be Paul McCartney. I think when you go through his catalog and his career, I've got no doubt that Elton John, Paul McCartney, the Rolling Stones, all of these artists that were able to have a six-decade career as well are going to be our new version of classical music 100 years from now. So 100 years from now, we're still going to be listening to Tony Bennett.
I believe that.
Amazing. Eric Alper, musicologist, promoter, Zoomer radio friend, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. We'll talk soon.